Welcome to Create Photography, a podcast all about the creative side of photography. I'm your host, Daniel Sig. Today, I'll have a discussion with Ted Vieira. We will be focusing on storytelling in photography. Ted Vieira focuses on mood, feel, and story in his photography. Emotional connection is really the primary element and the most important part of a photo for him. Ted really appreciates seeing a photo that tells a story. I have followed Ted's work for a while now. I really like his style of photography and the mood he is creating with his images. He also has a really cool YouTube channel and podcast himself, which is called Photography Matters, and I recommend both highly. I'll link to it in the show notes under danielsigphotography.com/TED, T-E-D. Ted, welcome to the show. I'm really glad that you're here today.
Hey, thanks very much, Daniel. Happy to be here.
Cool. So, one of the topics that I'd like to focus on today is storytelling. Conveying mood, feel, and story through photography is obviously something I think you do very successfully in your photographs. And you talk about this also on your website. And I think you've talked about it on your recent podcast as well. So here my first kind of bigger question, but how do you go about telling a story through your images?
You know, I watch a lot of movies. I watch a lot of cinema, and that's really where I get most of my ideas from and inspiration. Because, man, fantastic storytelling, right? I mean, if you're watching a movie, obviously there's a good strong story going on. And so I think of that in my photography. I try to transfer that through the photography because I do want to tell a story, and that's one of my goals, is to always try and get better. Because sometimes it's hit and miss. Sometimes you get it. Sometimes, yeah, not always so successful. But I do try to pre-visualize something, and I don't try to overthink anything. I move pretty instinctually. For example, if it's like one of the what I talk about as intimate portraiture shoots, where I'm working with usually a young woman, and it's just the two of us in a location. And basically I let them be themselves, and I might give like small suggestions just so that, like, if I'm working with natural window light, so that they can get, you know, lit a certain way. But otherwise I really like them to be themselves because it's not produced, you know, it happens naturally. And that's where I think I get more of a sense of story in some of those shots. You know, sometimes obviously they're looking into the lens and things like that, and you can tell it's a photo shoot, right? But I really like the shots that we come away with where it doesn't look like a photo shoot.
Right.
It just looks like somebody just a little slice of life there, a little moment in this person's life. Those are my favorite kind of images. I love all the stuff we come away with, but those are the ones that really stand out to me because there is more of a sense of story, something going on. As far as like street photography, whatever you want to call that, when I go out with the camera and just, you know, get urban landscapes, that kind of stuff, I don't try to get right up on people so that you can recognize who they are.
Right.
I used to, you know, I mean, everybody starts somewhere and change directions from here, you know, from time to time. But yeah, I used to just try and enjoy being right real close to people and taking shots and stuff like that. And it was interesting and it was good, you know, I guess training just to get comfortable out, you know, shooting in crowds and things like that. But it became less interesting to me unless you're that person or you know them or they, you know, want the photograph. It wasn't unless they're very interesting looking, there's something very interesting about the person, then that can be kind of cool. But yeah, I'd rather get something a little bit more ambiguous so that the viewer could maybe put themselves in the scene could imagine, you know, what I want to do is I want to engage the viewer. I want them to be a participant in the mm-hmm. image, so that if they can look at a photograph and kind of use some of their imagination to kind of fill in the blanks and maybe even, you know, see if they can, you know, they feel what that scene is like. That's pretty cool. I think that's more engaging, and it's kind of like reading a book where, you know, the words are there, the lines are there, the dialogue is there, but you have to use your imagination. And I think that's why people get so much more, even though people don't really read anymore. When right. you did, you know, it's like we used to say like, oh man, yeah, that movie was great, but the book was better.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you would hear that a lot because and I don't think it's just because it was written better. I think it's because it was more of a participating experience. Yep. We were interacting with the book. We had to engage with it. We had to use our mind, our imagination, that kind of thing. And so that's why I will even just sometimes, yeah, I'll just take urban landscape shots of, and there's not anybody in the scene. There's no people in the scene. But to me, when I try to use my composition, again, I don't really think this stuff out. It's more, you know how after you've done something for long enough, it's like
right.
playing music.
Yep.
You don't want to practice in front of a crowd. You do right. all your practicing and just get it down so everything's second nature. So when you walk out on stage, it's just, you're just responding to the moment and creating, and you're not thinking. If I think about what I'm going to do, that's the first, you're going to mess up, you know?
Right.
But right. so when you shoot enough to where your mind just kind of tries to get ahead of things, and you compose a scene in your eyes and capture it on the camera. And what I try to do is, like, again, transferring what I get from cinema, what I get from watching a lot of movies. I like to try and compose a shot of a scene. It does look like a movie still, you know, it does look like a movie set, and there's nobody on it yet. But they could walk, you know, walk on at any moment, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So that's how I try to get story in the two main kinds of photography I do is just that, just going out, and I don't like to call it street because
yeah. it takes
on, you know, so much more.
Right. Right.
But that kind of stuff. That's how I try to tell a story with that kind of stuff. And then with the intimate portraiture, again, I just like to, work with people who have that kind of presence. You don't have to direct them too much. They kind of bring their personality to the photo shoot. I know a lot of photographers that are genius at posing someone.
Mm-hmm.
But when I look at those kind of photos, and it doesn't mean that they're, it doesn't mean that they're a bad photo, but I can tell when somebody's been posed. And not that that's bad. It could be a work of art. You know, I mean, it really could. Mm-hmm. But for my photography to tell my stories, yeah, I don't want that. I don't want to see somebody go, oh, yeah, that's what Ted always has them do with their hands. Or that's what, you know. I don't want right. it to look overly produced.
Right.
Yeah.
That's very interesting. Answer. Well, and you just anticipated my question I was going to ask you about. You know, so you're not doing a lot of directing with the models. Obviously, you kind of let them be, and that helps you better maybe tell the story in a way, right? And it seems more natural. I feel like when I look at your portraiture, that's definitely the case.
Yeah. I might give like minor suggestions and just kind of maybe give like an idea or a theme or something like that, but then let them take it from there.
Mm-hmm.
I really love those kind of shots where it does. It looks more natural. And because like I said, with these young women and stuff, they're in, a lot of times they're not wearing a lot of clothes.
Right.
And that can be kind of a real uncomfortable situation. And so I feel like it's my job to help them feel secure, comfortable, and relaxed. And the more I can do that, the more they're going to be able to, you know, bring what they bring.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah.
How much time do you usually take for some of your shoots? I mean, is it like a half day thing, or is it kind of depends, or
it's usually Again, I don't do a lot of production, and lately, the last few shoots I've been doing with natural window light.
Okay.
So there hasn't even been any kind of, you know, the three light setup or anything like that. Right. So yeah, usually when, from start to finish, as soon as they come in the door, I usually like to talk for maybe like a half hour or so, just kind of, you know, just kind of catch up, see what they've been doing, talk about things, joke around, stuff like that. And then we'll start to shoot. And generally it's about a 2 hour window that we'll just shoot for a couple hours, maybe do a change, you know, wardrobe change, try some different things. And yeah, it usually works out to maybe 2 to 3 hours at the most. Mm-hmm. We used to do these photo shoots back when I first started working with models, man, we would shoot for like 4 or 5 hours sometimes. Mm-hmm. But after a while, you know, people just kind of, you lose the buzz. You kind of just the energy, you know, you've only got so much, and it's hard being in front of a lens.
Yeah. Right.
To have
right.
that kind of energy for, I figure 2 hours is, it's all right.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
So when we think about, you know, maybe going back to your other, well, again, we don't want to call it street photography, but maybe when we go outside, because I love doing that too. And I do some architecture too and stuff like that. But, you know,
photographer, man. I was checking out your work.
Oh, thank you. Thanks,
beautiful
man.
Photography.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I appreciate it. Oh, that's nice of you to say. And I wasn't fishing for compliments, by the way.
No, man. No, I look through your stuff. It looks great projects and things like that. Beautiful stuff.
Oh, thanks, man. So, yeah, when you go out, you know, and you shoot on the streets, let's say it's in Vegas or Portland or something like that, and you know, you're thinking about these stories. So how much then is in the moment, because when we go back to your visualization, I think you called it even intuitive visualization, which I thought was a really cool expression, because I also feel like there's a lot of confusion about visualization, you know, that people think like it means like you're thinking everything through, you know, a month before right, the shoot, right? Versus it can be very quick in the moment on the street, in my opinion. But I'm really curious what your thoughts are on that and when, you know, how you go about that on the streets.
It's kind of like having a conversation with, I mean, this sounds kind of cheesy, mm-hmm. but it's kind of like having a conversation with your location to where you see something and you just respond to it. Just like you ask me a question and I'll just answer it. I won't overthink it or anything like that. You just kind of respond to, you know, like you did. I was starting to listen to one of your episodes on mindfulness.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's such a strong tool to in anything in life, mm-hmm. know, to approach mm-hmm. with mindfulness, especially art, you know, especially right. photography, because you're open, you're aware of what's right in front of you. You know, if you're not being mindful, I try not to listen to music. And I mean, every once in a while, I'll put my earbuds in or something like that and see how that kind of shapes my event that night. But mm-hmm. most of the time, I want to stay just aware of things around me and kind of, you know, be in the moment, man. So, mm-hmm. Because sometimes, you know, you can go out and you go to the same locations and stuff and you start to get a little bit burnout with your city and you
right.
think, oh, man, I've shot everything I could shoot here. But you know that's not true. You know,
right.
know there's still stuff out there. It's just that you're not seeing it. So right. with mindfulness and just being aware, not trying to, I'm not good at overthinking.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't really work for me. For me, I just kind of take what's there. I take what's there in the moment. If I can just be open to it and let it show itself to me, mm-hmm. I'm not trying mm-hmm. to sound too cheesy.
No, not at all.
Just let the photo come to me. You know, mm-hmm. because it's there, it wants to be seen, it wants to be taken. Let me be, you know, let me see it. Just let me be aware so that I can. And the visualization thing, again, it's not, well, if I line this up so that the sun's hitting there and get a little star. And, you know, I don't think that way. I really don't think, man. Mm-hmm. I don't think when I'm doing photography too much. I mean, yeah, you know, you want to be aware of your background, be, yeah. And sometimes like I will be, like when I'm working with these women, I will be so focused. The face and the eyes are everything to me. Right. And sometimes, man, I will be so focused on their face and their eyes that, yeah, I won't see something that's hanging out in the background or something like that. And so sometimes I am too just drawn into something that I am focused on. But most of the time I just kind of want to, yeah, if I see a scene, does it look like a photo to me? And then take the shot.
Got it. And so what about, and I still keep asking also about the streets a little bit. You know, there's this, some people talk about the fisherman versus the hunter.
Yeah.
You've ever heard that? It's kind of it's an interesting analogy, I guess, or metaphor.
Oh, no, it's great, so, man.
How do you, when you go out, because I feel like for me personally, I'm kind of probably a little bit of both, but anyway, I'm really curious what you're thinking about this, and you know, are you one or the other, and how does that play into?
Unfortunately, I would say that I'm more of a hunter.
Okay,
and I say unfortunately because sometimes I'll go out at night and I'll walk around for a couple hours, and I'll get back to the car and I'll think, man, you walk too much. You know, it's like you walk too much. There's probably a lot of stuff I missed because I'm moving. Right. But I, part of the reason I go out too, I want to get some fresh air. I want to walk, you know, I want to have some exercise and things like that. So that gets kind of thrown in the mix, but I will get back to the car often and just say, dude, you walk too much, man. Just hang out someplace. Let some things happen. And that's usually when I'll get some better photos. Especially if you do want to photograph people, because then you just kind of wait, and you can wait for something to happen. Wait for that interesting cat to walk into the, you know, the frame.
Right. Right.
But yeah, man. By nature, I just tend to hunt more.
Okay.
How about yourself?
Cool. Yeah, I think a little bit of both. I think I walk around and look for things, and then I also sometimes stay put and kind of wait for things to happen, but sometimes I lose patience.
I'm not very patient.
Right. That's sometimes a problem for me too. But that's cool. How do you think focal length plays into telling a story and conveying a mood feel? You know, what are your thoughts about that?
Yeah. How I look at it, like, I own three lenses that I use, and I primarily like the 50 is probably my favorite focal length. If I could only have one focal length for the rest of my life. Well, I don't know. Well, what I use the 50 for, pretty much everything. But the way I think about it is, the 35, it's a little bit better storytelling lens, I think, because it brings in more context. But the 50 is when you want to have that kind of, you know, you're telling that story, you're giving everybody everything, but then you want to focus just on the hero, the subject. And that's where the 50 comes in. I like the intimacy of the 50 millimeter. And I do like, I like the encompassing, you know, and I know a lot of people shoot a lot wider than the 35. For me, 35 is about as wide as I want to go. So if I don't have any plan on what I want to shoot, I'll probably put a 35 on if I go out, because you can do anything with the 35. Right. 50 can be a little bit tight for some things.
That's true.
But my photographs that I like the most, it has that intimacy that I get from the 50. And I do have a 90, but I wouldn't recommend it for, well, I don't know, man, whatever works for, you know, whoever's using it. But, so I've got a 90 that, I hardly use at all. 50 that I use as much as I can. And the 35, if I just want to go out for a walk and, you know, who knows what's going to happen, that kind of thing.
Right. Are you usually then, when you go out, do you just take one lens and you don't have to worry about switching them out or anything like that? Or do you bring other lenses too?
Typically, man, I'll just not even grab a bag or anything like that. I'll just grab the camera with whatever lenses on it, and I'll just, that's going to be it.
Oh, cool.
I'll carry some like extra film with me.
Yeah,
but yeah, you know what? I went to Portland a couple of years ago, and I took a digital body and a film body. It was the worst decision I ever made because, man, I'm thinking like, should I get this on digital just to make sure?
Right.
I'm like, no. Well, I would. I'd switch back and forth on one nightly walk, you know, and I didn't enjoy that. I would rather just take in one film body, maybe a couple different lenses, just since I wasn't going to be home. But yeah, typically if it's I'm going to go out for the night and just shoot. Yeah. I'll just grab one body and one lens.
Cool. I know we share common love for film, so I guess I have to ask a little bit about that.
Yeah.
How is the medium film helping you telling the story and, you know, maybe setting the mood?
Oh, man. I didn't start shooting film until about maybe almost 5 years ago. And I wish I would have started a lot sooner. When I first started shooting with film, I thought, you know what, I'll probably maybe shoot one or two rolls a month and just it'll be something different, you know? Oh, man, I started shooting film and I was hooked instantly. And it just, I loved it so much. And the cameras that I shoot with are completely manual. There's no auto anything. And I think I do like the look of film. I mean, people can work digital images until they kind of have similar, you know, qualities, but it's so cool when it just comes, you know, when you scan the negatives in and it already looks great. You
right.
know? It has that look. For years, I would shoot black and white digital stuff and try to edit it to match those memories I had of when I was a kid and saw a black and white film. And I just wasn't getting it. I liked the photos because I didn't know any better. But then once I started shooting with film and I saw, especially with Acros, so black and white film, boy, it's just, that is a beautiful film. It's gorgeous tones and all that's great. But you know what I really love is the fact that there is no auto anything that I kind of put it like to the analogy of like, if you have a sports car that has a manual transmission, and you actually remember those days? You actually had to shift manually, you know, shift gears.
Yep.
And yeah, that's something else that you have to do. And a lot of people would look at that as, wow, that's inconvenient. You know, that's a drag. But no, man, when you were driving a manual shift, you just felt part of the car. You felt like you were part of the experience. You felt more engaged. You were more part of the process. It was fun. You know, that's the same way I look at film. From loading the film to advancing the film, you know, manually focusing, taking the shot and staying in the moment. You're not looking at the back of the camera. You're not second guessing yourself. I end up taking better pictures on film because I have more confidence. If I take it digitally, yeah, I'm a human being, man. I'm going to go ahead and check. I'm going to check out of the back of the camera and see if could I have done that a little bit better? Did I leave something out? Did I frame it right? You know, all that second guessing kind of happens then. Or with film, man, no, you just take it, you frame it, you take the shot and you stay in the moment or you move on to your next thing. It's cool. It is liberating in some ways. With digital, yeah, I'll take a digital camera out sometimes and I will shoot with it. Remember the first time I got, I went out, I picked up a used Leica M262 digital body and I went out and I thought, you know what? I'm not even going to look at the back of the screen because I'd just become so in love with the whole film shooting experience. I said, I want to kind of transfer that. And so I did. I shot for about an hour or so without looking at the back of the screen. And then I went and kind of like a salad or something like that. And I'm looking at the images and I'm just blown away at how good this stuff looks. But the only reason why I liked that outing was because I didn't look while I was shooting. Right. So I guess I'm kind of all over the map here, but what I really love about film is this, it makes me feel more if I get a good shot, it's because of me. It's not because of the computer. Mm-hmm. And so, and it does make me focus more. It does make me think more about, or feel more about what I'm photographing.
Right.
Cause you're, you know, you're, it's, you can't just rattle off a bunch of shots. Well, I guess you right. could, but you don't. Right.
Right.
So it just makes right. me, it, you know, that whole thing about slowing down, blah, 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 you know, mm-hmm. take mm-hmm. being more in the moment, thinking more or feeling more mm-hmm. about what you're photographing.
Right.
Because you're just going to take that shot. Maybe take two or three shots if it's something that's really important to you. And then you know, you got it.
Right.
I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. That very, very nice. Thank you. Thank you. That I totally agree with you. I think that all you said, I think it, for me, kind of very similar.
And I saw you were shooting some 120 too.
Yeah, I do some 120 as well. Yeah, it's a little, as you know, it's a little bigger. It's not.
That's cool.
But it's fun. I mean, they do have, there's a look to it. I had my doubts that that's really the case, but there's some of the shots have that 3D.
Oh man!
Dimension to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So another question.
Sure.
I think you mostly photograph black and white. I know you do some color, but can you also maybe kind of talk about that a little bit and what attracts you to that, the black and white format?
Yeah. You know what? I love black and white. I always have, whether I was shooting digital or film. For me, I heard somebody, I don't know if it was Helmut Newton, but somebody said something one time, it was a quote, it said, everything looks good in black and white, and some things look good in color. You know, I feel the same way. I can't remember who said that, but whoever said it, I feel the same way. Everything, I love the way, you know what, because it takes you out of reality. Because obviously what we see is in color with our eyes. The black and white kind of takes you out of reality. And that kind of helps tell a story a little bit better because it kind of removes you from anything that's normal. And I love, again, getting back to cinema, I love film noir. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I love that dramatic contrast, that selective lighting. I love to let my shadows disappear. You know, I don't worry about shadow detail. Actually, you know what? I don't even really like shadow detail. Maybe a little bit. I mean, I don't want to have this big black smear look like a big ink smear or something. But yeah, I'm not one of those kind of guys where you can pull shadow detail in and retrieve it and save it, especially with digital. That's amazing. But that's not the kind of stuff that I want to put up there that's very... it's very selective in the image. The eye is very clear on what it should be looking at. And I love how black and white does that because there's no color that's pulling your eye this way or that way. But here's the weird thing, man, is that a friend of mine had sent me a film camera. He has an antiques gallery up in Carson City. And he sent me a box of old cameras that were sitting around the antique store. And one of them was a Nikkor mat, 35 millimeter. And that's a heavy 35 millimeter camera. But it had half a roll of film still left in it. And so somebody had taken the first half of the shots. So I thought, well, this will be cool. I don't know if it's color. The ISO thing is set to 400. So, you know, I knew how to like kind of set up my exposure. And I went around and finished up the roll. And I thought, you know what, man, I don't know how to develop color film. I develop all my black and white stuff here at home, but I never shot color film. So I never had to, you know, learn to do C41 or anything.
Right.
But I did happen to have some C41 chemicals here because I was watching Michael Rosso, from
Film Photography Project.
And he was saying how easy it was to develop color film. So I go, well, cool, man. I'm going to use this opportunity to see what's on this film. Because I popped it out of the camera and it was a roll of color film. And so I used that opportunity. I developed the film, my crash course in C41. Mm-hmm. And I kind of cooked it. because I wasn't paying attention, and I just, the water was way too hot.
Oh yeah.
So I couldn't really see much of what was shot by the original owner or the person who shot the first half of it all. I could see some of my images as they came through, but yeah, it was messed up. So I watched a couple more YouTube videos and saw where I was missing that, you know, yeah, you mix the chemicals at one temperature, but then you bring them down to develop the film.
Right.
And so that was one of my little teaching moments there, learning times.
Right.
So then I kind of had a vengeance because, oh, I messed that up. And so I had a couple rolls of Ektar, and I went out, or I just went around the house shooting some different things around the house with a roll of Ektar, developed that. It came out beautiful. You know, it was great stuff. And I love with Ektar, I had some different light sources and things like that. So I had, it, I don't know if it's like white balance issues, cause I don't know enough about color film yet.
Right.
But I loved it. I loved these color casts of the magentas and the blues and the greens. That most photographers would probably look at that and just go, yeah, you need to practice.
But
I love it. I love that because, again, it gets away from the reality. It does something different, and the colors are so beautiful and saturated. And so I took another roll of Ektar out and went down to, you know, downtown here in Vegas, lots of neon, and boy, just beautiful. I could shoot neon all day or all night on color, and it's kind of got me excited about shooting color now. I still, you know, black and white will always be my go-to look that I want, but I am having fun because it is something different. I am having fun shooting color film now. Color digital doesn't really excite me because it's too perfect. It's too sharp. It's like taking a Xerox copy of what was in front of me. I mean, I know you can play with it in Lightroom, and that's, you know, that's what we do. But the film, the color film, it's got, I don't know if that's because I was messed up with the white balance and stuff like that, but that with those color casts that were kind of washing over things, yeah, it reminded me of old color film look, you know? Right. And that's, I'm a huge nostalgic person that I love the middle of the 20th century in the 40s, 50s, you know, 60s.
Right.
I love the photography that was happening back then and the look of the photos. And so, yeah, whether I'm shooting black and white or color, now that I know how to develop both, yeah, I'll probably start shooting more color now. Not as much, but you'll see it in the mix more often.
Oh, cool. Oh, that's cool. Then, because that was actually something I was going to ask you about more towards the end, but actually I want to get to it right now since we're talking about color. And so we got to talk about Saul Leiter a little bit. Because I know you love him too, and I do too. And I'll do a little shameless plug. So I did actually record an episode about him, which I call The Beauty of Simple Things, which is something I like to do in my photography too. And I think his stuff is just amazing and very painterly. And I think he used a lot of expired Kodachrome film, as far as I understand it, as well. But so anyway, curious about what inspired you about him and his photography, because I know you talked about him in the past as well. And
you know, I found out about him through Ted Forbes' channel, where he's kind of got a playlist of where he do these kind of short biopics on, you know, the masters of the 20th century photography. And so I checked out Saul and the stuff that Ted was showing in his video. I was like, wow, I want to go see more of this guy's work. So I went to Pinterest and you know, started looking at everything I could find on this guy. I ended up ordering that his early black and white set. And then I got the early color. Again, the black and white's a no-brainer. I'm already drawn to that.
Right.
But the way he shot color, man, it inspired me. And this was a while back, so I didn't get to it until now.
Right.
But, yeah, his color, like you said, very painterly, and the layers, just beautiful stuff. And the other thing that I really like about Saul, yeah, the color, the painterly thing, the layers, just beautiful. But then the black and white of more of the intimate shots with these young ladies. And again, that's where I get a lot of my inspiration from that form, because it doesn't look like a photo shoot. you know.
Right.
It doesn't look anything set up. You can look and it'd be in a bedroom where they just had a bed on the floor and, like, you know, records and books thrown everywhere.
Right.
And so it wasn't staged. It was, unless that's what they were looking for. Right. It was just, I felt like I was there. And that's why I love that kind of more, has a little more candor to it, because it does. It feels like I can feel that image more than I could feel something that was incredibly, even just expertly, you know, posed and processed and set up and staged and produced. All that work that goes into a shot like that. And these people are geniuses that, that come up with this stuff. But then you got the Saul Leiters, you know, who just can grab that moment.
Right.
And to me, I will always feel that. I feel that image much more than anything that, that has 20 different light setups.
Right.
You know, that's where, like landscapes. And I'm not a landscape photographer at all, really. I'll shoot some sometimes just because I've got a friend who loves to do landscapes. So I'll go out with him and just shoot some. I'm terrible at it, though. But when I'm looking at other people's landscapes who are really good, the less processing, in the more natural, where I can feel what it feels like to be there. You know, then you have some people who will just really overwork that photo.
Yeah.
And it might just be stunning and eye-catching and just really pop, but it's going to be a little too much fantasy for me. I can't feel it.
Right.
Yeah.
That's
why I like Saul stuff so much, because
it
just has that feel to it, it's, especially his black and white stuff. And then the color stuff, it's so artistic.
Right.
Yeah, beautiful stuff.
Yeah, really beautiful. It's really amazing. And I still have some of his books, but I want to learn more about him too. And I don't have his black and white. Well, I've seen a lot of his black and white work, but I don't have his books yet in black and white. So I'd probably, got one of his early ones, right?
There's the early black and white. It's a 2-volume set. One's called Interiors and one's called Exteriors. The Interiors is more of like where he's shooting like people and things like that. And then the Exteriors is his kind of street work and stuff like that.
Oh.
And then the early colors are just a fantastic companion to those. It shows his other side. And then he's got another book. If you do like the intimate portraiture that he did, he's got another book that's called In My Room.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all it is.
Hmm.
It's some, there's some crossover.
Right. Right.
Like, you won't be unhappy with
You make. Because he did some commercial photography as well, right? And some fashion, actually.
I guess that's how he paid the bills.
And yes.
You know what? Yeah. I've never seen any of that, not to my knowledge.
Right, right. One other topic I want to discuss, and then a couple more questions. But so that's kind of the topic of projects. Something I think is... So I personally love photography projects, and I think they're probably pretty important tools for us photographers. It's also something I'll talk about in the podcast as well. So my first question to you, are you working on any projects at the moment?
I've got a couple things I'm thinking about. I did take a digital camera out to shoot, where my friend Garrett knows about another place out in the desert here where there's just all these decaying and rusting out old vehicles and stuff.
Oh, yeah, that's beautiful. So cool. Yeah.
And you get those, remember, like the old colors that it used to be on cars, like the kind of weird blues and green and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I was out there and I was photographing that with my digital camera. I had the preview set to black and white, and I'd planned on, hey, it's going to be some cool old stuff. I'll go home and, you know, I'll process it all but black and white, and it'll be, you know, very nostalgic looking and very cool, right? Well, I got home and I loaded all of the files into Lightroom, and I'm going through, and I got kind of mesmerized by these old colors, you know, from that. And so I'm looking at all the rust is just really vibrant, orangish red, you know, on some of these cars, and just the sun was just bouncing right off it. And I ended up processing, I think, all but one of those photos I took digitally in color. which is incredibly unusual for me. But I couldn't. It's like one of those situations where, yeah, you can't deny the color that's happening here. And so I almost thought, well, you know what? Maybe I'll put together like a short little zine, you know, with these color images. And because I started printing with MagCloud. Is that what they're called? So it's like another company from Blurb.
Right.
And yeah, man, I started doing small books, booklets, zines, towards the end of last year. And I got kind of obsessed with that because it gave your photography, you know, purpose. It's going somewhere. It's not just, oh yeah, that's a cool shot. And I realized that the kind of photography, kind of photos that I make are probably more like ones that would make a good collection in a nice little small book, something like that, rather than something that you're going to see on a print above somebody's couch in their home or anything like that. Right. So yeah, for projects, man, I want to shoot everything with the mindset that this is going to be in a book. You know, this is going to be a collection for this, like photographing, those old cars. I thought, okay, man, just a couple dozen shots. Maybe I'll go through them and edit it down and put together a small zine of color, you know, vehicles. But then I started shooting with color film and I threw that idea out the window because now I love the color film so much more.
Right.
So now I'm thinking about just maybe like, you know, this one isn't really original, but I'm just really excited about it right now. Just a collection, a small book of neon and scenes that are lit, that just photograph beautifully at night in color. That kind of thing.
Right.
So yeah, projects. I don't really like to shoot without one anymore. I'm not that interested in just taking random photographs. I mean, I will, because we're photographers and we want to shoot, you know, more often than if we don't have a project. But the project drives me more. It excites me. I'm a little more passionate about those because you're doing something. You've got an end point that you're going to, you know, put everything towards. So I'm more excited. Right. And man, if you're not excited, you know, nothing's as fun. Unless you've got that passion, man, you just like, you can't wait to put this stuff together.
Right.
I love that kind of thing. If I don't have that, I'm just not that motivated.
Oh. So if I understand that correctly, you might go out with your medium format camera on color film to the desert and shoot those cars with that, possibly. Something like that, right?
You know, I am looking forward to doing some medium format color. And you know what? Medium format is so beautiful. The funny thing, I picked up a Mamiya C330 twin lens reflex.
TLR, yeah.
So much fun to shoot. Such a different shooting experience with the waist finder.
Right.
Waist finder, waist level.
Waist level, finder, yes.
Waist finder, so, I mean, such a fun oh, and that glass, right? Looking down through that is so beautiful. And then I picked up an RB67 because I thought, oh, this is cool because I kind of like more of a rectangular shape of the image. So I got an RB67 because I thought, how cool is that? I mean, you can just rotate the back and get, you know, a vertical shot or a horizontal shot. And so I thought, I'm going to do a lot of portraiture with medium format. That was like my plan. And then I rarely would pick it up, you know. 35 millimeter, it just gives me more of the look that I want. It's not as good. It's not as beautiful as 120 is. But it's just got the look that kind of resonates more with what I'm looking for. Right, I like things that aren't too perfect or not too pretty. I like stuff that's kind of got some edge to it and a little gritty maybe. And even with Ektar, it's a 100 speed film. I pushed it to 400. That's clean. And it was almost, I wasn't used to seeing that clean of a photograph. It almost looked a little digital to me. It was the colors though that really wowed me, how cool the color looked and stuff. But yeah, so 120, even though it looks those negatives are just amazing.
Right.
I'm more drawn to that 35 millimeter.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
I totally get it. Well, you're right. And the grain, you know, the grain in these fine grained films in 120, you may not see it.
Yeah.
Some of the color, right? You still see, you get the film look, I think. I mean, it renders the highlights more like film and stuff like that. But you're right. You don't see the, it's not the same for sure.
Yeah. But I it would be fun though to
right.
do, yeah, like a nice photo shoot with some 120 color, man. That would be beautiful.
Would be a cool project.
That'll happen at some point.
Yeah. Yeah. So I do have a question. Actually, I asked some of my Instagram people as well. And so I got one question for you from them. So it relates to the magazines or the zines. And they said, so Ted loves making magazines. How does he go about editing and sequencing? It's kind of a good question.
Yeah. Well, for example, the first book, the first zine I ever put together was a collection. It's another location here in Southern Nevada where there's, again, just these decaying, rusting out vehicles. And they've even got it set up so that the buildings around them, the surrounding areas look like, you know, it doesn't look out of place. It looks like it all goes together. They've got huge, you know, Texaco signs and you know, a lot of old advertisements from oil companies and stuff like that. And it all goes together. So you feel like you just walked back into time, you know, so it's a cool location to shoot. So I, that was the first book that I put together, was just all the shots of all these old decaying vehicles. And so what I did is I went through and, as far as sequencing, I would divide it up into sections. I think first I just do a kind of general overview introduction. And then I started with, I think the section was called Curves and Chrome or something like that. And then I would focus on the vehicles that had a lot of chrome, had those curves, just beautiful, right? And then I made a section just for trucks. I said something about the trucks, the ones that did the work, you know, and I showed all these old trucks. So I kind of would just make up sections of categories and put that together and try to not put too much of the same thing, you know, into the book, into the zine. and I don't put too much text in, you know, maybe like a little bit at the beginning of a new section, I might put like the title of the section and then maybe a little bit of subtext, but, and then the rest of the book is just images. And I just do one image on the, on the right page, so the left page is completely blank. That way, because I tried a few different test runs, and at first I was putting an image on every page, right? So it'd be facing images, and unless those images had something to do with one another, I didn't really like it that much. And I found out I was going through the book faster if I put an image on every page. I wouldn't stop and look as much. Where if I put just a single image on the right side, yeah, man, I would stop and I would take more of that image in before flipping to the next page. So everybody does it a little bit differently, but that's kind of the way that I kind of just decided. I've done it that way ever since. But I can't recommend it enough, you know, cause especially with, MagCloud or Blurb or any companies like that, where it's print on demand, man, you're not having to shell out, you know, your second mortgage or anything like that to finance a book project. You can make it incredibly inexpensive. It's a lot of fun, man. And to see your stuff, you know, in print in a small zine or book, it's very rewarding.
Right.
And it does give you that kind of buzz, that kind of excitement to want to move on to the next project.
Right.
And of course, you can be really in depth. You can be as in depth as you want to. You can, you know, just make it quick and easy. It's, you know, everybody's different. Everybody's got their thing they can do. But the cool thing is, it's so much easier to do now. What I usually do too is I use MagCloud offers different templates for different apps. Like you could do it in Photoshop or InDesign's probably the best because it's such a powerful layout tool.
Right.
But I just use their pages for Mac. template.
Oh, the pages. Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. I just downloaded the template, opened it up in Pages. In Lightroom, I turned my screen brightness down to about 50%.
Right.
I'm just on iMac here. Mm-hmm. I turned my screen brightness down to about 50% and made any kind of tweaks to the images that would make them look good at that brightness. And then I saved them at full size at 72 DPI and just saved them at full size. I wouldn't change the size of the original image. And then I would just put those in folders and take those up and then start dragging them. And you just drag and drop them.
Right.
See the Pages template. Mm-hmm. You can start to put together stuff so quick. Because I'd never really even used Pages before, but it's a pretty easy learning curve. So I just started just dragging and dropping the images, go to the next page, drag and drop, put a little bit of text in, you know, and put together, like, I think their minimum page count that you can do is like 24. So just, and I would just recommend have them put together 24 page. Don't worry about writing the whole story yet. Don't do the whole thing. Say you're going to put together, maybe it might turn out to be about 75, 80 pages, something like that. Yeah, don't try to do it all in the first run. Put together like the first 24 pages. Upload the file, wait for it in the mail, and see if, okay, cool, now I know I'm going to need to do this. You know, I'm going to, I'm going to want to tweak these images this way and the layout thing. Like, I would try different kinds of layouts and see, just kind of play around with it. You can start to add some graphic design into it and things like that. But yeah, man, I can't recommend it enough. Have you put together a book yet?
Yeah, I've done a couple things. So I used to do a little, I still do a little bit of commercial photography on the side. So for that one, instead of the traditional, you know, portfolio book, I just did a magazine with my, you know, kind of for the more artsy commercial stuff. And then I did, the other thing I did is just a small little, you know, one of those really tiny zines that you can bring along, because it actually came in handy in Minneapolis. I'm in Minneapolis, St. Paul. I got, you know, sometimes when you do street photography and I shoot, you know, I was photographing buildings, I got stopped. And, you know, security came out and said, hey, what are you doing? I have my Hasselblad, you know, and they were, unfortunately, I didn't have I had my ID, but I didn't have a business card. So I showed them my little zine and said, you know, this is kind of the work I'm doing. And they were cool with that. So that was kind of nice. I definitely, and I'm all for printing. I often print my photographs. Just, we have a pretty good, it's called Pro DPI here in Minneapolis. They're a professional print shop. And so I send them some of my, you know, also the 120 work, and it's really fun to just have it, you know, actually see it, you know, in your hands. Yeah. And I love doing that. Definitely. And you inspired me to do more of that of the project work. That's why I wanted to talk to you about that too, because I think, as I mentioned, I have a whole episode on projects where I want to go a little deeper too, because I feel like, and you're so focused on the storytelling part. I did a project 365, you know, I never printed it. But in hindsight, what I criticize myself, because the only limitation I gave myself was every day, you know, produce that image every day, which is pretty hard to do. I mean, it's a very challenging project, but I didn't have a story arc over the whole thing. And so I felt like, but I was working in series a lot, which I love to do. And I just do naturally, you know, I had a series in blue monochromes and then yellows and, you know, stuff. So that's cool.
Yeah.
But it's still cool creatively. But I feel like, you know, that's why I like the way you do the projects. I think that's really cool. There's a concise kind of a story around them. And, you know, it's like the prime example, of course, is The Americans, right? The book by
Robert Frank. Yeah,
by Robert Frank. And, you know, because I'm Swiss, so I'm plugging that a little bit, because he's originally from Switzerland.
Right. Yeah.
Great but book. I mean, that guy, so what's so cool about that book, you know, he was on the road for, I think, 1.5 years. I mean, that was, and he shot so many, I think 27 I forgot how many roles, but it's anyway. So
wow.
It's pretty cool. That book really, I think, changed photography too. And that's, I mean, you can call it a project. It's obviously a major project, but that's why I think projects are so cool, because they can end up right in a book. So, but
yeah. And I just, for me, the best part of it, man, I do love the print. I do love the printing of the books and things like that. That is a tactile experience again, you know,
mm-hmm.
It all comes down to that. But
right.
The main thing that I really, I thrive on is just the energy, the excitement mm-hmm. of the purpose of the project.
Right.
It gives me a whole different perspective on life. When I'm involved in a project, I'm excited.
Mm-hmm.
I'm projects. I'm just kind of thinking, man, what's my next project?
What's the next?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. I definitely, and I have these informal ones, like the architecture is for me a little, you know, it's kind of an ongoing one, but sometimes it's cool to have them a little more concise and kind of maybe formalized. But anyway, so another thing I think we have in common is love for jazz. I know I play the guitar, you play the guitar, you're probably the much better jazz player, but I'm just dabbling in jazz. I play some other stuff. But so I'm kind of curious, do you have time to play these days? Do you play with others? What are you listening to?
Yeah. You know, I went through a phase, this is probably a longer story than you want.
No, that's cool.
because I used to play professionally.
Oh,
that's what landed me in Vegas, because this was still
very cool.
I could still work full time. But then when I got out of playing full time, man, that's actually, it's about 12 years ago. I can't believe it's been that long. I went through a phase where I kind of stopped listening to music and jazz, completely, because here's the thing. I was starting a new business where I was doing photography, but it was like product stuff and web design and content creation and stuff like that. And I knew if I even listened to jazz, I would want to play. And I would be the kind of person that I'd pick up my guitar and I would play like for 4 hours without even, you know, realizing that I'd spent that much time doing it. And I knew that I wasn't going to get my other business off the ground if I was distracted. And so, I quit cold turkey listening to jazz, listening to music, playing. I was still kind of still playing full time at the time, because I was a little bit of crossover time there. And I would learn the tunes I needed to go to the gigs, do the shows and things like that. But then I wouldn't play anything else during the day. I wouldn't practice jazz. I wouldn't play jazz. I wouldn't even listen to it. And so I went for a few years where I just wasn't listening. And it wasn't until about 2 or 3 years ago I started listening to stuff again, kind of opened that part of my life back up again, and started playing more again. And I've got a flautist, jazz flute player here in Vegas. It's one of my best friends, and we'll get together and play maybe once a week or something like that. Maybe go out and do a gig every once in a while. And I do try and play, even if it's just an hour every day. Just, you know, I don't practice anything. I just play tunes, you know, that kind of thing.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Do you play mostly jazz, or do you play other genres too? Or
is it that's really, when I was working commercially, man, you play everything, you know,
from
heavy metal to, you know, classic rock to dance medleys. And when I first got to Vegas, it was all dance medleys and a lot of choreography. And man, that keeps you in good shape. but then for my own self, ever since then, it's all I play is jazz. And if somebody wants to learn, they need to learn jazz, because that's all I'm going to teach, that kind of stuff. And,
oh, cool.
Yeah. And my favorite players are like Bird, you know, Charlie Parker and Miles.
Sure.
Bill Evans.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not as inspired by guitar players.
The modern guys, not so much? Or?
I went through a phase in the 80s when I was going to school and I was listening to Mike Stern and Schofield, you know, and the new Miles stuff. I was really into that kind of stuff. Michael Brecker, all that kind of stuff. But then, anymore, it's like I said, Charlie Parker, Coleman Hawkins, Ben Webster. You know,
right.
I like Joe Pass. He's, I think,
oh,
just
yeah.
a brilliant musician.
Oh, yeah.
Ella Fitzgerald, I love the singers. I love Billie Holiday, all mm-hmm. that stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, very cool.
Paul Desmond.
Yep.
Yeah. Basically everybody who's dead now.
Yeah.
Same with photography, right? I love all the photographers. Kind of
right.
their prime and same with the music. I like everything right. kind of from this that mid 20th century.
Yeah, it's a pretty cool time.
Yeah,
for sure.
How about yourself? What kind of stuff do you like to listen to?
You know, kind of, yeah, I'm pretty broad, so I like to all kinds of jazz. So Scofield, for a while, I was really into. There's so many. There's some cool modern players that I'm just blanking the names off right now, but there's some really good guys. And yeah, but I also do, you know, rock and some country sometimes. And I like Johnny Cash, is his really late work, you know, that he did with Dan Rubin when he did his The American series. I think that was kind of cool, very intimate.
That whole series, and
I'm not a big country person really, but that whole series is, I think he did Hurt, was a famous cover. He did a lot of covers, and it's just such a one, it's just amazing with his voice, and then it's very intimate, and you know, it's him on the guitar, maybe a piano, very, very, it's just really, I think it's very captivating to me.
I love the old country, that more soulful kind of stuff like that.
Yeah.
And Willie Nelson and I love stuff from rock. I love funk. I love funk.
Right. I like funk too.
Yeah. So I love everything, but as far as anything I play anymore, it's pretty very straight ahead standards.
Right. Oh, that's cool. That's cool. Yeah. So I have one last question, and then because I probably have to let you go. So back to film. I'm kind of curious, and I know you like different film stocks and now some of the color, but what's your favorite film stock at the moment?
I shot Fujifilm, you know, Neil Pan Acros 100 speed film, pushed to 400. I don't think I've ever shot it at 100. I just pushed it to 400 one day just to see, you know, what it would do. And because a lot of times I shoot in low light situations, so I don't really want to go much lower than 400. And that film, oh man. Mm-hmm. Before that, I started off shooting Tri-X and did some HP 5. And all that was cool. I was just excited about shooting film. I loved it all. But then I saw the scans when I was scanning the Acros negatives. Oh man. I'd scan them and then brought them into Lightroom. I'm like, this is different. This has such a different look. And it was so rich and beautiful, these silky blacks and smooth highlights and just beautiful, especially pushed to 400 because it gives it a little bit more contrast. And so now I do love that. I fell in love with it. I didn't shoot anything else for a couple of years, and then it went away.
Right.
So I started trying a bunch of different kinds of film, and that was kind of a fun period. But I kind of ended up coming back to Tri-X. Tri-X is just that classic film, punchy black. I like the way the grain looks. I've always wanted to love Ilford film more because. Mm-hmm. They're such a dedicated black and white film company.
They are.
I want to support these guys any way I can, but I like the Kodak look of the grain better.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I mostly now these days, if I'm shooting black and white, if it's really stuff that I want to look really beautiful and pretty, then I'll shoot with Acros. Hmm. Everything else is kind of going to be Tri-X.
Right.
And, I've got some, what is it here? The P30 from Film Franya.
Oh, the Franya. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I tried it. Okay.
That. I haven't shot it yet. And so I'll try that. But you know what, man? I think I'm for black and white, it'll be probably Tri-X most of the time, and then Acros for times special events. And then for color, that world is just kind of starting for me. So right now I'm enamored with the look that I'm getting from And it looks a little messed up even, but that's why I like it. That's from cool. Nectar. And I'm sure that's my fault. I'm sure Kodak knows what they're doing. Right. It's me who's making it a little bit creative, right. I guess.
Right. Yeah, it is a little more temperature sensitive, I suppose, with the color. You know, you got to be pretty during the development process. You have to be right on, I think. Otherwise,
I've heard that. Yeah, instructions that I watched on different YouTube videos, everybody talked about I got the C41 Unicolor. I think I got it from the project.
Okay,
and everybody's saying mix the stuff at 110 Fahrenheit. And that's kind of where I stopped listening, I guess, because after that they say develop your film at 102 Fahrenheit. Well, I mixed it, got it to 110. I had all my chemicals at 110. So yeah, man, let's get into it. I just poured the developer in, and I'm sure I probably cooked. That was that first roll of film that I found in that Nikkor mat camera that was gifted to me. Right. And it just, that came out really bad. It came out really bad. Plus, with black and white, I would always use PhotoFlow, Kodak's little rinse there at the end.
Yep.
And all the videos I saw on developing color film, nobody said anything about PhotoFlow. And that's one thing that I saw in that very first roll of film that I kind of just messed up, is there was just tons of water and drops and everything like that. And so I thought, I'm going to go ahead and try some PhotoFlow at the end of this. And that took away all the water drops.
The water, stuff, right, so. Right.
Yeah, I'm in the learning process.
Very cool, very cool.
What kind of film do you like?
Oh, when I started really getting back into the film was about a year ago, pretty intense. So I've been pretty exclusive film now for a year, I've been experimenting a lot too. And so I tried the HP5, the Delta I like quite a bit from Ilford. Yeah. That's pretty cool. I tried some of the Rolly films, they're pretty cool. But I kind of go back, like you, right now I'm actually at Tri-X. So that's what I shoot mostly these days, is Tri-X. And then for color, just Kodak Portra 400. I keep it really simple.
Yeah, it seems like everybody loves Portra.
Yeah, I think I tried some of the more budget films, but I was not happy with the colors. And I decided I'm not developing color at home. I only do black and white at home. It's just kind of what I do these days, but
hey man, get into color, developing color. I put it off for so long.
Maybe I should.
To me, it's even easier than black and white,
right?
Because
right.
It's a lot. It takes a lot less time,
right? Right.
So do it, man.
Yeah, I know. Cool. This is Daniel Sick, and you listen to the Create Photography Podcast. Our guest today was Ted Vieira. Ted's website is taffphotography.com. You can find links to Ted's website, YouTube channel, and podcast Photography Matters in the show notes. Today's episode show notes can be found at danielsickphotography.com/TED, TED. Ted, thanks again so much for being here today. It was really a lot of fun, and I really enjoyed talking to you.
Hey, thank you very much, Daniel. I appreciate being here and anytime, man.